Hello, I'm Keith Parent, and welcome to Focus Asia Pacific from PCJ Radio International. It's very nice to have you with us on today's edition of the program. This week, we're doing a best of Focus Asia Pacific. The reason is, well, of course, like everybody else, we need to take a little bit of a vacation ourselves. So we're going to be featuring two of the best items that we've had on the show in the last few months. The first item on today's program talks about design, more particular design from Southeast and East Asia. Over the last number of years, Asian designers have been making a name for themselves on the world stage, but there is still a very long way to go. Many people criticize Asian designers for just copying what they see in the West. This, however, is changing. Now, maybe 25, 30 years ago, that really was the case. But in the last 20 years, Asian designers have been coming onto the world stage, making a name for themselves with very unique designs. To find out more about this, we're going to be speaking to Imin Pao. He's the editor of a company called The Brand Company that do branding for other companies in China, Taiwan, Singapore, and Hong Kong. He's also an expert in this field.
I think the design follows the industry. Well, you see, the design will need it because the industry flourish. And I think you're talking about the Asia region. I think more probably more specific to Taiwan and China. Now, Taiwan, of course, we are the island for semiconductor and computers. So there's going to be a lot of company that needs to have acquired design for products that they wanted to put up. And same thing for China. So I think it's gonna be the needs will be of course the demands will be much more stronger than ever because all these companies in China and Taiwan want to put up their own product.
Right, because for many years, for example, here in Taiwan, there's a bicycle company called Giant, and 20 years ago, 25 years ago, they were leading the way in the design of bicycle technology. They're now the largest bicycle producer in the world. They've surpassed everybody. And we're now starting to see that, say, their bicycles are starting to look beautiful finally, because there's always this argument going on between engineer designers and designers. Engineer designers, they make it work, but it sometimes looks a little funny, and then the other designers come in. Because Taiwan has this technical capability, do you see now that they're going to start introducing, say, more beautiful products in line, let's say, like with Apple design and other companies? We see that with HTC, for example.
Right. Well, of course, the Asian, or China or Taiwan, they wanted to try to do something beautiful. I mean, everyone does wanted to do that. But I think there's a really you have to discuss this problem or this aspect deeply. You really have to understand the culture and the education and how people are trained to design to appreciate beauty. And I think they will a lot of them go to, of course, study in the U.S. or foreign country, try to get the foreign education and try to increase their ability to design something beautiful. But I think still the breakthrough will still come from Europe and U.S. instead of from China. Even though the market is here, the factory is here, but they still trying to follow the trend, not leading it. I don't see for the next 10 or 20 years, I don't see Asia design. There will be stronger presence in the world, but they are probably not able to lead any new trend just yet.
Do you think a lot of that has to do with education, for example, in many fields, in the arts, for example? In a lot of schools in the West, like if they're teaching music or drama, they teach people to improvise. They to become creative without, you know, following the text. Do you think that is part of it?
I think education and culture is everything. I was just talking to my friends the other day that one of my kids grows up, she listened to music sometime. And a lot of her friends and classmates at age 8, they don't listen to music anymore. They don't appreciate contemporary music. They don't appreciate Prince. They don't know the difference between Alicia Keys and Macy Gray. So they don't appreciate music, so they don't have that kind of creativity in their blood. But what they have is it's more they play it more safe. That's what it fits to Asia culture. They play it more safe, and they do more of improve than initiate. because to create something original, you have to take a lot of bold chances. That's what American education and propaganda are very good at. They encourage you to take a bold step to go where no man has gone before, which is leads a lot of failure. But in I think a Chinese education lead to more safe, and you also you're trying to improve something people already have. So we basically, you know, we're taking a lot of a Western goods and we improve them. That's what Japanese are very famous for in the 80s. They try to improve design, but they are not original. You know, all the Lexus automobile are basically improvement for Mercedes-Benz, which is already a benchmark, but they try to improve it.
That's sort of like what Sony did with televisions.
Right. And now, of course, you know, Apple come in and rewritten all the rules, and then, of course, the Nokia and Sony are no longer on the map, which is they are the biggest giant in the 90s. So you can see, I think American education, I come from American education background. I was trained, educated in States, and I really appreciate the way they train you. They really open up the possibility that you can create. And I think design at its top form comes from those original thoughts and original mindset.
What about a time... Do you see it when Asian brands will be on the international market in Europe and in North America the same way with North American brands?
I think we'll see more international Taiwan or China brand, of course, because they're going to be out there somehow, like HTC and other, you know, giants and all that. We're going to see more of that, but I doubt there will be a leading brand in that category, simply because Chinese are not born leaders in creativity. We are also not aimed for that. I think Korea has a lot of ambitions trying to be the creative capital city or country of the world, and you can see the ambitions and it pays off. I don't know if that's going to be true for China and Taiwan yet. I don't see it in their agenda.
Competition must be fierce because you don't just have China, you have South Korea, like you just mentioned, you have Japan. You also have new emerging markets in Southeast Asia, Vietnam, Cambodia, Laos, Burma. They're all coming to the top. Do you think that there's going to be more cooperation or there's just going to be more competition?
I don't think it's going to be a competition. Those are small Asian countries that you mentioned about. They don't have a giant manufacturing capability. I think the manufacturer is still holds a great strength in the future of the design. So wherever the country holds a lot of manufacturing power, like UK or British in the Industrial Revolution, if you host the manufacturing capability, then you host the key to create. And then all this southern country you're talking about, the Thailand and Vietnam, they're going to be slow. And I think China is going to be a dominant force. They're going to be a giant leap than any other countries trying to create something new. So I think some will emerge in the next 10 years. You will see something like IBM, Nokia, this giant size, very design-oriented company from China. I think that could happen, but not any other small countries just yet.
I suppose in a case like China, it is quite challenging because for many years, ever since China opened up, a lot of designs were copied and sold under different brands, but they looked just like the original. Do you think it's going to be difficult for China to say, look, we have an original design because of this stigma that's attached to them that's been there for many years?
I think it had to be education. It's going to take about 30 and 40 years for Chinese to realize to do something original is a pride. But right now, because they can just do a lot of copycat and they make a lot of money. And if they can make a lot of money, their life is so much better than before. There's no need to do something original. They just wait for somebody else to come up with something good and they improved it. So I think that it's incentive. For longest time, there's no incentive to be creative and original. There's no need for that because you don't make money that way. Your parents doesn't make money that way. You see people already copy. Japan has been doing that for the longest time. They're still doing that. They still improve some other things. I mean, without Apple, you know, this is, the whole industry won't exist about this, you know, touch screen, all that. I mean, Apple didn't invent that, but of course they come up with a way to package together. And then that, therefore, you have Apple, then you have HTC and Samsung. That's how I view it. So I think China or Taiwan will never be a original leading country just yet. I don't know if that day will come, but I don't see it happening in any time soon. And I think America and Europe will still have those original spark, and then Asia will take those sparks and improve it and make money out of it.
Now, you've been doing this for a number of years. You've been involved in this industry for a number of years. If somebody, let's say, in their early 20s came to you and wanted advice for say, education, what would you suggest to them?
Well, design. You mean for design, right?
For design, yes.
Education. I would suggest them, of course, definitely go abroad, study in U.S. and Europe, really get the sense of the different culture, because I think they're more grand. They care more about other things. They have more values than just money. I think China and Taiwan has really, I think it's lost a lot of values, and those values actually contribute to your ability to create. And if you only aim for money and wealth and success and fame, I don't think you can create something as dreamy as you know, you cannot create animations, movies, buildings, objects based on those criteria. So anybody who's trying to go into this field in China and Asia, I would suggest them to really put a lot of time, learn from Europe, and then trying to work in Asia, because that's where the market and the opportunities are. But you need to have a world mindset.
Your company, The Brand Partner, works closely with other companies to brand their products and to brand their image. You have had experience outside Taiwan. What are some of the different challenges, let's say? I mean, is it more challenging here to brand a product than, let's say, in Europe or the United States?
Well, our strength is basically more a global village. When clients come to us, they value us because our ability to gather a group of best people around the world, the best photographer from Belgium, the best makeup from Paris, the best model from Czechoslovakia. We are able to bring the best people around the field and serve our China client. That's our strength. So it is a challenge, but it's also more, for us, it's more of an opportunity, because we're not able to do that in Taiwan, because the client's size are not, they can't afford this kind of a team. But in China, they have the budget, so we're very happy working in China to serve our client this way. That's where we pride our strength, to able to build this as sort of a global Olympic team together. That's basically what we do.
Ibn Pao, the owner of The Brand Company, talking about Asian design. You're listening to Focus Asia Pacific, coming to you from PCJ Radio International, a special edition of the program, a best of. Now, there are two hobbies out there that are extremely popular. One of them is photography, and the other is, well, one of my personal favorites, traveling. Now, what if you could combine the two together? No, I don't mean going to some tropical island or some far-off country and just taking pictures. No, but going off to, let's say, Burma, or Vietnam, or Cambodia, or Laos, bringing a camera. That's the next step. The next third one is, of course, taking a course on photography. Well, there's two guys in Singapore who have decided to combine travel tourism and photography lessons all in one. Simon and Alan are based in Singapore, like I said, and they're working with the Singapore Photography School, and it's an absolutely fantastic idea. Now, the two of you have sort of combined traveling, tourism, and photography together. This is, of course, a very interesting thing to do. I don't think it has been done it probably has been done in other parts of the world before. But where was your inspiration to do this? How did you come about? Were you just, say, traveling, let's say, to Cambodia and said, you know, we should organize tours and of amateur photographers and, you know, teach classes on the go, so to speak?
Well, actually, it was a sequence of coincidences, really. People have been telling me for a number of years, oh, you should go into education, you should go into training. I've been shooting professionally now for nearly 20 years, and I've been shooting for commercial clients quite a lot. And basically, you're kind of just executing a creative's visual. One day I just said, you know, I want to do something for myself. I want to relearn, refine myself, because 20 years of commercial photography, as I said, you're just acting out something. You're not actually really creating something from your own heart. And part of education was to go into a discovery process for myself. And I was thinking, okay, I was assessing all the training products on the market, and they were very much very online training. And I said, well, why don't we take training to beautiful locations? And I could see that there was a need for people want to spend their money differently these days. They want to spend their money on something meaningful, a holiday where they come back with something, that they've learned something and they've enjoyed something. So our courses, we teach a basic foundation course in photography. And again, it's a lifestyle holiday, so it's not too taxing. We both have an ability to kind of explain technical or distill technical know-hows into easy-to-understand analogies. So it's not a taxing course, but you get to experience a new country, you get to stay in a wonderful hotel, and you get to learn something. And we have a sustainability program that we give back to the community. So, you know, when you come on a course with us, we're putting money back into microfinancing projects, healthcare, education, you're teaching the locals how to take pictures as well for themselves. So anyway, so I'm jumping the gun a little bit. Alan's been in training for a number of years now and runs a very successful school, the Singapore School of Photography in Singapore. And I phoned him up just to pick his brains, basically, about training. And it so transpired that he had the same vision as well about doing these lifestyle destination courses. So he was doing groundwork as well. So we met up on a few occasions and we talked, and and then we we decided to kind of like collaborate, you know, using both of our skills and putting them together.
Now, the both of you are located in Singapore, which is, of course, very close to places like Vietnam, Cambodia, Burma, Laos, Thailand, Philippines, Malaysia, of course, and India and Sri Lanka, Bangladesh. How do you decide on where you want to go?
Our first course is Cambodia. And we very much like Cambodia because it's has a very diverse spectrum of locations to photograph. You have the wonderful temples of Angkor, which are absolutely stunning.
Which is one of the seven wonders of the world.
Yeah, and then you have floating villages on stilts. Just a short drive out of Siem Reap, you're in the countryside. It's just such a colorful location to photograph. Basically Asia is our studio. There's so many wonderful locations out here. That's why we decided to focus our training courses on Asia. It's just a world of opportunity. It's our outdoor studio. Now Burma's opening up. That's going to be very interesting. We're planning our next course in Burma. It's fantastic. It's just such a colorful location. That's why, we're focusing on Asia as our studio.
Yeah.
What could be better?
Alan, let me ask you, I mean, you have a photography school in Singapore. What are the kind of students that you get? Are they people that, let's say, that just want to learn more about it, or they want to become professional photographers? Because from what I've seen so far, there are a lot of photographers everywhere.
The kind of students that we have, basically, they're from all over the world. So we have students from as far as South Africa, Venezuela, from China, even Oman. So, you know, you name it, we might have it. But the level of the knowledge that they have, again, is quite a broad spectrum too. We have people who just want to know how to use the camera. so that they could take pictures of their son's wedding next weekend.
Mm-hmm.
And we have professional photographer who want to strengthen their foundations. And so we cater for all kind of people. But the important thing, it's really not just own a good camera, but know what you do with a tool. Then you could produce all kind of stuff that you want. And that's what we do. That's what we provide. We make sure that you have a very strong foundations.
Yeah, you know, you just mentioned something interesting right now, because you'll have people, let's say they like to do carpentry, and they buy really expensive tools, but their carpentry is absolutely lousy.
Yeah, exactly.
Part of course, is the equipment that you own and also your own skill. Now, let's say, for example, I went to the two of you and I said, look, I know you're doing this trip to Cambodia. What can I expect on it?
You can expect a world of discovery. Make new friends, learn new skills, new bonds.
Learn the culture.
New culture. I mean, as soon as you arrive in the airport, I mean, we've arranged transportation via tuk-tuk, which is to awaken your senses to the wonders of Cambodia. So you're not going to be picked up in a coach bus or a fancy limousine. Oh, you can have a limousine if you want, but we want to experience the real Cambodia, the sights, the smells, the sounds. So that's our welcoming experience. So
it sounds like, for example, by doing that, you're trying to put everybody, say, in the right spirit and the right mood to go there and be able to photograph it. Because, I mean, for example, like myself, if I got on a flight and went to Cambodia and I went to the historic areas, I would just take pictures and that was it. But I think you're trying to do more than that, correct?
Yes, it's a lifestyle. It's a lifestyle. It's a learning experience. It's making a positive difference to the community that you're visiting by giving back. So it's a whole holistic approach to photography courses. It's not just about learning the basic foundations of photography. It's a whole, I repeat again, a whole holistic experience.
Yeah. At the same time, think about this. You can do travel without photography. You know, when you travel to a place, you would definitely hope that you bring back some very nice pictures back home. A lot of time, you could have a very nice camera, but by the time you get home and you look at the pictures, you'd be like, oh, you know, I wish I could have done better. But it's not a place that you could wake up tomorrow and go back there again. Imagine, you know, another country really far away. So this is going to be a really good trip, because you go to that destination, it's not just to sightseeing and take pictures, but you learn exactly how to produce the pictures you want in a very proper way. What I mean by proper way is, if you're able to visualize what you want, you would able to achieve it. So that is foundation of in photography. So once you're able to do that, then you know you make the best use of your entire trip. You go there sightseeing, learn the culture, and at the same time able to produce pictures that you want and come back, be really happy and satisfied with what you have captured.
Now, when you're doing these trips, are you mainly, say, working with digital cameras or also, you know, traditional SLR type cameras?
Well, mostly everyone's accessible to digital cameras now, and people that are learning are going to be learning on digital cameras. We're exploring about doing some, maybe on some of the trips, we might be doing some, you know, one day workshops on alternative processes with film. so yes, going back to basics. So, you know, pinhole photography and gum bichromate early processes, cyanotype processes, just a rediscovery for those people that want to get exposed to film. So yes, we will be working with film-based mediums in the future, but most of, I think, who are clientele at the moment will probably be, you know, breaking the ground on digital and then exploring film later. Hey, but our courses aren't just open for beginners. They're open to all levels of experience. So they're great for people that want to brush up on their skills, that have done a course before and want to come along and just exercise their knowledge. They're more than welcome to come, and it's to brush up on their skills. So yeah, it's not just limited to basic foundation photography. I'd say it's open to all level entry of skills.
Simon and Alan in Singapore talking about a very interesting idea to combine photography lessons and travel all in one. Now, they just did their first one to Siem Reap, and they were planning a number of other excursions as well. If you want more information about them, you can check out the website for this show, www.pcjmedia.com/FAP, or send us an email, focus@pcjmedia.com, and we'll send you a link. And it's an absolutely fantastic idea, and I've been reading some of the reviews of people that went on the courses on their Facebook page, and they had an absolutely fantastic, fantastic time. So if you are going to be in Asia Pacific and you're looking at doing something different, this is the way to go. Anyway, we are now out of time. If you wish to contact us again, our email address is focus@pcjmedia.com. You can listen to this program again on past editions by going to our website, www.pcjmedia.com/FAP. That's www.pcjmedia.com/FAP. You can also join the PCJ Radio International Facebook page by doing a search on Facebook for PCJ Media, PCJ Radio. Click on Join the Group, and that's all you need to do. So, until next time, friends, this is Keith Powell wishing you well, saying we'll see you again very soon in 7 days' time. Take care, and bye-bye.